With show host, what?
What's going on, family? I'm back. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you. What's good? What's good? I hope everybody is happy for the most part. The NFL is back. College football is back. We're an hour away from a kickoff for today, week two of college football. I'm going to make this mainly a boxing show. We have a big time fight on tonight with Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, middleweight champion, holds about three or four belts at middleweight. Great Britain product, Special K. Kell Brook is jumping up two weight classes to challenge Triple G for all of his belts except for the IBF, who pulled out, wouldn't sanction the fight because of the weight difference, the size difference. That's interesting right there. Interesting detail. But we're going to talk about that. I actually have Mr. Latorres Harrison from the Standing Eight Live podcast, also the Show 317 podcast out of Indianapolis, Indiana. He joins me to talk about Triple G. We also get into a little power discussion. The guy's a writer, thoughtful cat. So we kind of touched on some entertainment because that's what I do here. Pay me no mind. We do sports and entertainment. I do. I'm sorry. I'm acting like I have a team. I also have Lorraine on Facebook. She's Rain Divine. I don't know. I'm not sure if Divine is her last name or not, but she's from the Real Deal Boxing Club from out of Cincinnati, Ohio. I had her come on to talk about what's going on with the Real Deal Boxing Club. They have a fighter out of there, an impressive super welterweight kid that's fighting out of there, but they have an event coming up on September 24th, Enemy of the State. So I brought her on to talk about that and just to get a female's perspective on boxing. We also, last night before we, as we were recording, Toledo, Ohio's Robert Easter Jr., E-Bunny, he was taking, we got done recording about an hour before he was slated to fight Ghana's Richard Comey. Both of them had excellent records, big time knockout percentages. Robert Easter went on to win that fight, split decision, very close fight, very closely contested bout, but he bested Comey to earn the IBF lightweight title. I said 135 pounds. Pretty good fight for the PBC. Also, in a kind of a snoozer, the headline fight, or it might have been the co-main, was the Jacobs Mora 2 fight. Jacobs came out of that with the KO in the 7th round, stopping Mora. I'm not even going to spend a lot of time on that because it wasn't the most exciting fight to begin with. It wasn't something that I really wanted to see, but if you're familiar with the first fight, which some people said had a round of the year, the first fight between Mora and Jacobs. My disappointment is that Jacobs has done little since KOing, knocking out Peter Quillin, and then you go back and fight this guy. When I just said that Triple G is the man at middleweight, but we'll get into some of that later. And then I also think I'm going to put in a little piece. I had a chance to speak with Dayton, Ohio, welterweight southpaw, Jeff the Nightmare Camp. Two weeks ago, he actually knocked out second round knockout of Augustine Cicero at an event over there for CBA Promotions. I had a chance to speak with him. You know, Jeff's been on the show before, so I talked with him back in the dressing room, and he said some interesting things that it's better if I just play it than to sit here and try to recap what he said. Looks like he might have some big opportunities coming up, so we'll get into that. But I want to touch off on the Kaepernick thing just a little bit because I haven't had a chance to do it. I kind of watched a lot of what was written online. We have a couple of pieces up on goingfor2.com where you can check me out. But we had a piece by Kelly Rutter, and also I believe Matthew Garrett put a piece up. There was a couple impressive pieces put up on ESPN.com's The Undefeated page. They had a couple of really thoughtful pieces by Dominique Foxworth and Bomani Jones had a really excellent piece, and I really didn't know what I could add to the discussion in print, but I did want to touch on some things before we get into this, and I want to keep it brief because this is maybe a longer episode of the Pay Me No Mind show. But yeah, I want to touch on that really quickly because I really want to try, you know, to help us see some things before we just call Kaepernick and some of these other NFL players ignorant fools and then dropping the N-word on them and just not really getting these guys the point that they're trying to make. So I have a few thoughts on it. So let's look at this. I feel like Alonzo from Training Day with Hoyt and trying to explain this, my position and what's going on here. I feel like this scene right here. It's ugly. It's necessary. I know not standing for the national anthem is struck to the core of a lot of Americans. I understand that. But let's back up for a second. Let's not call these guys ignorant like they have no rhyme or reason to what they're doing. You know, how can you call these guys fools and some of the things that are being, some of the hatred that's being spewed towards these young men because of the stance they're taking when you don't even know who Sandra Bland is? I haven't seen anybody that's called these guys a fool come back and say, I acknowledge or I know about what compelled you to do what you did. Nobody's even said that. But nobody knows the people complaining about it. Have you said that you know who Eric Garner is? Do you know who Walter Scott is? I'm not even going to tell you who they are. You have a chance to Google them and find out for yourself. But look at Walter Scott's situation. Look at Philando Castile, the video that was on Facebook. It was live streamed on Facebook. Check out Philando Castile. Auden Sterling. Check out Samuel DeBose of Cincinnati, Ohio, whose family received nearly a $5 million payment for what happened to him. Look at some of these names and then see if maybe there's some justification for why Colin Kaepernick decided to get everybody pissed off and do what he did. Check out some of those names before you call these men ignorant and before you simply write this off as being somebody playing the race card. And I just want to say this. I got a couple of things really quickly, and I'm getting ready to get into this Jeff Camp interview. But I'm here in Ohio. Jim Brown is a Hercules or is an athletic god in the state of Ohio. And a lot of people respect Jim Brown. A lot of people respect Muhammad Ali, the GOAT. But I wonder, do today's people who may have T-shirts, you may have sweatsuits with Muhammad Ali's name or likeness, people still buy Jim Brown, white and black people still buy Jim Brown jerseys to talk about he's one of the greatest athletes in the history of the country. But do you understand that Jim Brown actually seriously tried to get together with other elite black athletes back in the day and advocated those athletes forming their own professional sports leagues? How bold was that? How rebellious and defiant was that to go and try to do such a thing? Muhammad Ali said everything that he felt in his heart after coming home from the Olympics as a gold medalist, being treated inferior or being discriminated against, and actually threw his medal into a lake in Louisville, and went on to say all types of honest thoughts from the bottom of his heart. This man skipped out on the war, draft dodge, you know, it was dodged the draft, said he would not go and fight. And this guy, every time that I've worn my Muhammad Ali t-shirt, an older white gentleman has come up to me and said, man, I love my, you know, something positive about Muhammad Ali and how he was a great dude, how he was a great athlete. You know, he appreciated watching him. So it made me wonder, how could these guys take these unpopular, defiant positions back in the day and then 40, 50 years later still be heralded by non-black sports fans? And how could they still respect them? And I felt like through it all, sometimes if you really speak from the heart, shoot straight with people, you're not advocating harming or bringing, you know, injury to others, but you speak up on something and take a stand, that maybe, you know, over the course of time that people will understand where you were coming from and you'll be respected for your position, for standing up. And then lastly, just as an example, I had a friend, a high school classmate on my Facebook page. This is how things that don't involve you or aren't germane to your life, you know, aren't near and dear to you, this is sometimes when people just need to shut up, just need to move on. Which, like I said, if you don't know who Eric Garner is, Walter Scott, Philando Castile, some of these situations that have caused Colin Kaepernick to do what he did and what he may continue to do. But if you don't know who those people are, let's just take a look. So I'm looking on my news feed on Facebook yesterday, and a classmate of mine, she was the only person that posted an article about an autistic guy in Columbus, Ohio, home of the fourth, fifth ranked team in college football right now. She posted a story about a young man who was pulled over and charged with OVI, operating a vehicle under the influence, and the cops arrested the guy, took him into custody and everything. Come to find out, the guy was autistic. I hope that's not being disrespectful or being, you know, politically incorrect. The cop pulled him over after noticing the driver swerving and whatnot, gave him a breathalyzer, filled the sobriety test and all of that, took the guy back to the station, and, you know, he blew the breathalyzer was clean, urinalysis was clean, and, you know, the guy said, well, he was swerving and he forgot, he failed to put on his turn signal, and, you know, he arrested the guy. So my classmate, she had some reaction to that. Something, you know, she said something to the effect that, you know, it was unfortunate and people just don't understand, etc., etc. Nobody else checked out what she was talking about that I could see, none of our other, you know, mutual classmates. But it was near and dear to her because her daughter, one of her daughters, is autistic. So this story that the majority of us, 99% of us, didn't care about, it hit home to her. Because the police didn't respect or understand or treat this autistic driver. You know, they violated his rights or something, or they disrespected him or did something, in her opinion, that caused her to acknowledge the situation. And I just feel like that's kind of what's going on here with this bigger story, is that the people complaining about Colin and some of these, what these other athletes are threatening to do or have committed to do or are vowing to do to get this point across about social injustices and hypocrisy here in the country. Like Jesse Williams said at the BET Awards, this doesn't concern you, so just sit down. You know, I'm just like Alonzo just said to Jake, it's ugly, it's brutal, but it's necessary. You know, some people are trying out here doing something more than just running around banging their heads into other heads of athletes. They actually have an opinion on something that's going on out here. And maybe it's not popular. Maybe, you know, maybe not standing for the anthem and the flag, whatever. You know, maybe it is disrespectful. But don't totally get into the war you know, and disrespect your friends. Don't go out here and disrespect other black friends and everything by engaging in some of the racist stuff just because you failed to even take a second to look into the background of what's going on here. So look, I'm getting on a little bit too long. I'm gonna come back on the other side of this break with this Jeff Camp interview after his second round knockout. It was a devastating knockout. You can check it out. I wrote about it on goingfor2.com. Just check out anything by R.L. Woodson. I think they actually put up a boxing page for me on there where everything can be collected in one area for people. On the other side, we'll check out Jeff Camp, some words from Jeff Camp, and then we'll get into Latoris Harrison and Lorraine from the Real Deal Boxing Club.
Subscribe to TalkLoud Radio on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, or download the Podbean app on the App Store or Google Play, and search for TalkLoud Radio, all one word.
All right, I'm here with Jeff Camp once again. What's going on, man?
What's up?
What you think about tonight's performance against, what's it, Augusta and Cicero?
Yeah, Augustine,
Cicero. Chris Cicero.
It was, I feel like I could have been sharper and everything, but like me and my team pretty much expected him to come out trying to box, which he did, so we just figured let it come. If we get the knockout, it happens. If not, then just boxing the whole way out.
About what time do you think you got his timer down? I saw you hit him with like a check right hook, backing up like maybe in the middle of the second minute of the first round, and then it seemed like from there it staggered him a little bit, and then it seemed like you got more comfortable.
Yeah, I say with this whole timing thing, I say it pretty much came towards the end of the first round and everything after watching how he moved, because like this fight, I actually watched footage on him, and he had the same bad habits that he had in the footage that I watched. So it was pretty much like just making sure I capitalized on it.
Were you shocked that he wasn't pressing the action a little more, or that he started so slow?
I actually wasn't shocked about that because of the fact, like, the footage that I did watch of him, when his opponent was pushing forward, he was actually backing down. Like, he wasn't pressed on pushing forward with him and making it a fight, you know what I'm saying? So it was more so, like, I knew as long as I pushed forward, I knew he was going to always back down to stay in his defense shell.
Right. And that's what his, I was sitting right next to his corner, and they were, urging him to press forward and get started. You think it was your movement, or you think that kept him from starting at all, or was he trying to figure you out, or what?
Yeah, I think it was
how. What was it, that check hook that kind of?
I can't really tell, but I personally think it was how I was moving and everything, because I wasn't sitting in front of him, like my head movement was on point and everything like that. So, like, in the moments where I did actually sit still, it was pretty much the baiting man to commit to his jab or something like that. So I had to hit him with a clean counter, like you said, the hook, the check hook. So I had to hit him with a nice clean counter over his jab.
All right. Now, so you come out in the second round, I immediately picked up on the fact that your right hand was lower. Your left hand was still close to your cheek, ready to fire off. You got comfortable. What was going on right there?
Pretty much with how he was shooting his jab, low. So I was pretty much trying to bait him into shooting his jab and actually committing with it, so I had to actually shoot the straight left hand, like, over top of his guard and everything like that. So that was pretty much with my left hand, my lead hand being low, pretty much just a trap for him.
I didn't know if that was to fire off a shot quicker, or because you were trying to bait him in to get off what you were looking for. So let's walk through the setup with a knockout then.
Before the knockout happened, pretty much I was more so working, like, trying to work inside with him and everything,
right,
like,
right,
that.
I saw that.
And he pretty much dodged a hell of a hook that I threw at him. He got out the way in time.
Right.
So then, like, at the same time, like, in the corner before the second round came out, my coach told me pretty much double jab and shoot the left straight down the middle. So that's like, as soon as he dodged that last hook that I threw when we was inside, that's pretty much what came to mind, like, seeing how his arm was, and off me throwing my feints, how I was shooting my feints, he always kind of stepped back and his hands were going to go low, like he thought I was going to the body. So it's pretty much just basically just a feint. And then the second jab was to get his hand in motion. And then a straight came straight down the middle, like my coach said, and it was
lights up.
That was that.
Did you know it was over with when you hit him? He was out before he hit the floor.
I act like when the first punch, because if you watch it, like you watch the footage of it, I threw two straights.
Right.
It was a double jab and a double straight. The first one, it was like a, like I seen his eyes close, and then I'm like, nah, let me make sure. So I threw the second one, like the keep the impact, like keep it going. But like after he, like how he fell, I pretty much knew what it was, because he fell like arms to the side, stiff and everything like that. So.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, when it's face first, it's pretty much over with. How'd you feel being out of town? I know last time we talked, you came to Indianapolis and got slighted on the cards. You didn't let it get to the judges tonight. How'd it feel to probably get, in my opinion, I think you got knocked out of the night easily. What was your thoughts on, you know, thrilling the Indy fans coming all the way from Dayton?
It was cool, but like you said, like with the last fight, it was like, crazy is the dude I fought last time. I guess he was talking trash and whatever after my fight. Like, oh, I beat Jeff. Whoa. But at the same time, we offered him a rematch 3 times.
Still looking for him.
Right, still with extra money on the table and everything. He's still running from me and everything. So now I know for a fact, like after tonight, he's not going to want to do a rematch with me. So pretty much is, like, it is what it is now with that. So it was cool. Like I feel like I could have did better. Like, I mean, but hey.
What's next, man? I know Pearson Promotions is trying to put together a card for mid-November. I'm imagining, I've already heard that you were, you know, one of the featured fighters on that. What do you do looking forward to that moment?
Because we didn't really take too much damage during this fight or anything, we're right back training Monday. Training camp from the fight mid-November, we'll start Monday, and then just progress from there. Just keep going.
Again, that'll be probably back down at the convention center. What's your expectations as far as maybe a bigger turnout or, you know, more support from the city? Any thoughts on kind of growing the events that Pearson Promotions is trying to put together in the city?
One thing I like about our city, man, like support is real thin down there. So I don't really...
Thing when you were on the podcast a couple times, we talked about getting your record right, and you're doing that now with two consecutive knockouts. What's next for you?
As of right now, like we got a call yesterday with some people that's interested in me and everything. I'm not gonna even speak. Like I don't want to speak on it.
Right, right.
Because I just want to like just let it smooth out, let it go how it go, man. But we got big plans coming ahead. Contracts will be signed soon and everything.
Okay. Once again, this is your man Wood of the Pay Me No Mind Show out here with welterweight Jeff the Nightmare Camp.
Like I said, that was Jeff the Nightmare Camp out of Dayton, Ohio, Southpaw welterweight. Now 2-2-1, two knockouts. He might be fighting September 24th. For anybody that's in the fight, the knockout was very explosive. You know, Augustin Cicero was a very had a significant experience advantage against Jeff, so it was kind of huge that a guy with 4 fights put away a guy with maybe 80 rounds, I believe, 80 professional rounds, to put him away in you know, the 33 seconds, I think, in the second round. Do yourself a favor and check out, I believe, Next Gen Champ on YouTube. My man Jay Kemp, he was there recording it. He might have posted a video on it, the video of the fight. Curtis Hill Jr. actually won the Indiana Light Heavyweight State Championship on that night. Shout out to CBA Promotions on a good event. It was tons of fights on there. Like I said, you can check out my article online at goingfor2.com. It's a couple different ways to find out more about that fight. So, you know, keep looking for Jeff. Like I said, if he sounds like he has an opportunity coming up that may, you know, involve a TV appearance or a bigger venue, we'll see what happens with Mr. Camp. Let's get on to Real Deal Boxing. The Real Deal Boxing Club out of Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm going to let Lorraine discuss it for you.
And I'd like to welcome a very special guest to the show. Right now, we're getting ready to get into a nice discussion with Miss Lorraine of the Real Deal Boxing Club out of Cincinnati, Ohio. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Like I said earlier this morning, I'm so thankful. Yesterday when I woke up and I saw you checked out the page on Facebook and then sent me a friend request, I was like, man, I might have some action tomorrow night for my podcast.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk.
Good. That's great. First of all, happy Friday to you.
Same to you. It took long enough to get here.
Right. This was a long week. For those that are listening, I do want to say that Lorraine is driving right now, so we're going to hope for her safety and everything, try to keep this kind of short, and just dig into some Cincinnati boxing, find out about what's going on with Real Deal Boxing, talk about an event they have coming up on September 24th, and I thought it was just interesting to talk to a female that's active in the boxing game as far as managing and supporting fighters and doing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. And so I'm glad you're on. So let's dig into this. I got a real serious sweet science conversation planned for us. And the first question, what's your thoughts on the series debut for Queen Sugar?
Oh, for Queen Sugar, oh my gosh. I was so emotional watching it, and I just couldn't figure out why. But it was so good. I loved it. And I'm a fan of that actress. I don't know her name. I think she's the oldest sister, the one with the lock.
Yeah, I was just checking her out. She was on, I believe she was on the Showtime or the HBO show about Blood.
True Blood. That was one of my favorite shows.
Right. But you got a thing for Ralph Angel, right?
Yes, I love him. I love him. I don't know. Is that his real brother? They look just alike. But I really love him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they related. His name is actually Kofi Siribo. I think he's from Africa or something.
He's gorgeous.
Well, I don't know much about that. But I went. What's your thoughts on the show, though? Just to be serious for a second, what's your thoughts on the show? As far as I know, for me, I like what Oprah Winfrey's network is doing as far as introducing some more serious roles and some more serious characters, as opposed to some of the stuff that the messier extra stuff that I see on some of the more popular mainstream shows. That's what I'm happy about.
Yeah, I've never, this is the first show I've actually watched on OWN.
Okay.
But I do, like I said, the actress caught my attention, so I was like, I have to watch it because I love her. But I really like it. Like, I think I'm going to keep up with it. Like, I'm usually like a Grey's Anatomy and Scandal girl.
Okay.
But I like this show. Like, everybody just did so good in it.
The only thing I was a little down about was the fact that Glenn Turman, who I guess played like the matriarch of the family or the grandfather, he passed away, spoiler alert, in the first episode or the beginning of the second. And I kind of would have been interested to see what he would have brought to the show.
Right. I think they'll probably have flashbacks. That's what I'm assuming. Because he's such a big name, to just have him only in one episode, which is, I don't know. I'm pretty sure we'll do flashbacks.
Right. So you haven't checked out Greenleaf at all? That's also on Home?
I have not.
I would recommend.
Everybody keeps telling me to.
I would recommend it. Before we move on to real boxing talk, I'm very excited to see what the dude that plays Hollywood, Omar, the actor's name is Omar J. Dorsey, but he was actually on another series about 2 years ago on Ray Donovan, and I just thought they killed him off in one season, and I thought he was an excellent actor. Hello? I think we lost.
Yeah, perfect cast. Everybody just... Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, I just thought that was interesting the other night that you were a fan of the show. Like I said, I do like where Oprah is going with some of her original shows that she's picking up. And like you said, I think I'm going to be tuning in for the remainder of the season for Queen Sugar.
Mm-hmm, same.
So what's going on? What's up? Tell us a little something about the Real Deal Boxing Club.
Okay, Real Deal Boxing Club has actually only been open for maybe a little over a year. It's almost been 2 years. It'll be 2 years in February. Originally, they split from another gym, and then they were boxing. I met this group of kids and coaches in a gym, a local gym that I was going to, just to get in shape. And then they ended up leaving that gym, and I ended up following them. We have the best kids in the country right now. Probably like 90% of our children are ranked in the top three in their weight classes. We just went to ringside. We just took over ringside. We took 12 kids. We came back with 5 belts. 7 of them made them to the finals. 5 of them came home with belts. 3 of them, it was their first tournament, and they came home with belts. And let's see, Jamonte Clark fights out of our gym. And we're actually getting a lot of up-and-coming pros that are kind of coming and wanting to train out of our gym. I think they just see we kind of making some noise in the city right now, or around the country, actually, at all these tournaments, and everybody wants to be a part of it now. So I'm just glad I got to be I'm a part of this gym, Real Deal Boxing Club.
Right. For those of us, I'm a little rusty. I'm going to be honest. I'm a little rusty on my amateur boxing and how people get to HBO and Showtime and even the PBC. What is Ringside?
Ringside is it's just one of the tournaments around. It's one of the bigger national tournaments. It's actually a world championship tournament. So I think there were people like Ireland there. I think a couple different countries from Europe there, but it's a really big tournament. They held it in Kansas City, Missouri this year. I think it was like the end of July. It's one of the bigger tournaments where you get ranked. You get ranked in that one, and the Silver Gloves, and the Junior Olympics. Not the Junior Olympics, the Junior Golden Gloves.
Okay. So what was your experience in boxing before getting involved with Real Deal Boxing Club these last 2 years?
So I actually had no experience in boxing. I had just started working at a bank like maybe 5 years ago, and I had got like chunky. Like I had put on like 20 pounds, and I was like, oh no, I gotta gain some weight. I mean, I gotta lose some weight. So I found a gym, I found a boxing gym, and I had to take out some stress too. I was really upset at the time. And so I found this boxing gym. These kids just happen to be training at this boxing gym. I'm looking at these kids do like, they're like 7 years old, 8 years old, doing 100 pull-ups and 100 push-ups a day. I'm like, oh, I need to get like them. So I'm like, can I work out with y'all? And they're like, sure. And like, I just fell in love with them. Like, they're like my family now. Like, I'm at all the family functions and everything now. So.
Okay.
And I've learned so much from them and from the coaches. I don't know. But I don't have, like, I've probably been 3 years in boxing.
Okay. Okay. Where is the Real Deal Boxing Club located for anybody that might want to check you out?
9611 Hamilton Avenue in Mount Healthy. I think it's inside of the old Rink building.
Okay.
Which is, yeah.
Okay. So been active for about going on 2 years coming up here at the, oh, you said 2 years since, February. Oh, it'll be 2 years in February.
Right.
Okay. Who's heading it up? I mean, who's doing the training? You know, who is it open to?
The head coach is Coach Buck or Kevin Benford. And then we have Coach Gary as well, and then Coach Breezy, and then Coach Tuck. They are kind of like the beginner coaches, but Coach Buck and Coach Gary are the two head coaches. Coach Buck is the head coach of Jermonte Clark, and then
that's the brother that's always wearing red.
Probably, yes. He either always has one, like, usually you'll see him in, like, a Be the Goat t-shirt. Like, he has a ton of those t-shirts. But he's, like, the bald guy.
Yeah.
He coaches Jermonte Clark, and he's also the coach for the USA team, I think, in 2013. I think that's when Jermonte fought on it. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And I'm just so lucky to have him as, like, the head coach of the gym I'm at, because he knows so much. I'm kind of, like, up under him. Like, everywhere he go, I feel like I have to go, too. I'm like, y'all going as far at a different gym? I'm coming. Oh, y'all going to a different city as far? I'm coming. And I hope I don't annoy him. I kind of don't care at this point, because I kind of feel like we're family. But, like, I just learned so much from him. And I know sometimes he just be shocked at the stuff that I say. Like, yeah, I'm paying attention.
So what are some things that you're picking up on the game with that access and exposure, you know, to all of these up-and-coming fighters? What's something that you might know more than me? I mean, what's something that you've picked up on?
I guess I picked up on a lot of things. Like, I can tell the difference between somebody who's been fighting for a while and just different fight styles and coaching styles. And I can pretty much pick out weaknesses now, too. Like, I'm kind of like a baby coach.
Okay.
So, like, I can probably get kids started if I wanted to. But, yeah, I can tell you, like, what you're doing wrong. I can tell you what you're doing right, how to fix it. Right now, I don't want to be a boxing coach, but I feel like I'm more like a promoter or maybe a manager. I think I'm like Girl Heyman, like Heyman 2.0.
Okay. So you still train on a daily basis or weekly?
I work out. I don't work out at our gym because I have too much to do there. It's like work.
Okay.
But okay, I try to stay in shape so I can fight kids if I have to.
Okay, so in addition to getting some of these kids along, you know, going down the road of amateur boxing and maybe pursuing, you know, some type of career in boxing, what else does Real Deal Boxing Club offer as far as, you know, maybe just people who are interested in staying in shape or people lifting weights or anything? There's certain classes going on or...
We actually don't have classes, but you are more than welcome to come in and work out with one of the coaches to get, like, a real boxing workout. And
okay.
They also do personal training as well as all four of the coaches. So you can do that. They're all priced differently. It just depends on what coach you get and what time of the day you need, how many days you want to work out a week, things like that.
Is the workouts, is that boxing oriented or is it like weight training or what?
It just depends on what you want. I pretty much have a coach for everything in there.
Okay. So with kids that are maybe interested or parents that are maybe interested in getting their kids involved at the Real Deal Boxing Club, can you just go in there, could a kid just go in there and maybe train for either fitness or just for maybe self-defense or just training for performance improvement in other sports, or is everybody kind of encouraged to go down the road of sparring and, you know, actually getting into boxing?
I would never put anybody in the ring that didn't want to be in the ring, although most people think they're ready to get in the ring the first day. But I usually tell people, like, you have to wait at least a month before I allow the kids to get in the ring. But I do have a ton of kids that come in and that just want to train, who don't want to fight or who don't want to compete, who just want to come in and train. During the off season, the football season, we have a ton of football players that come in and train as well.
Okay. That's kind of what I was getting out there, just so people know, you know, that we can go over there and feel comfortable if we don't really want to get into actual boxing. Once again, this is the Pay Me No Mind show. This is your host, Wood. Right now, I'm on with Miss Lorraine of the Real Deal Boxing Club out of Cincinnati, Ohio. What's your role as the manager? I mean, are you managing the club, or you may have alluded to it earlier, are you also kind of hands-on with getting involved with managing, the fighters in turn, you know, as being their boxing manager?
I haven't really gotten in as far. Right now, I'm just focused on the gym. I know a couple of my kids do want to go pro, and I see them having successful professional careers. So I'm trying to just basically learn the pro game, and I'm just surrounding myself with people and networking, just trying to find mentors and just learn as much as I can and soak up as much as I can about the pro game. So I think I would. Right now I'm feeling more like, I guess I could promote and manage maybe. But I don't know. I'm kind of just going where the wind blows me right now.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. So, I was talking to another manager, a boxing manager, and a trainer for actually a current world champion right now, and he mentioned that he watches hours and hours of boxing each day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always looking for new fighters or studying fighters for potential matches with his own fighters. How much boxing do you actually take in?
I'm not going to say I watch it for hours a day. I'm like just getting in the gym, but I do a lot of networking social media, like Facebook and Instagram. I link with everybody. I meet coaches on Instagram. I find different boxing gyms. For the show we're doing on the 24th, I linked up with like four different boxing gyms around Ohio through Instagram, like alone, and they are actually coming down for our show. So I do a lot of networking like that. I follow a lot of promoters. I follow a lot of managers. I follow a lot of fighters. I try to network with them on social media. And then when I do see them at the shows, and just out or in the camps or in the gyms, like they recognize my face.
Okay, glad you mentioned that. How can people? I think social media in something like sports, some of the different promoters and gyms and trainers that I'm kind of being introduced to and networking with at this point, I think in some cases, especially promoters, that social media is being underutilized. How can we find Real Deal Boxing Club online?
So we definitely have a Facebook page, Real Deal Boxing Club on Facebook. I'm in the process of creating a new Instagram just because our first one got hacked, haters. And then we also on Snapchat at the Real Deal Boxing Club as well. So we don't really have a website yet, but we're on most social networks.
Anything on Twitter?
Nothing on Twitter as of yet.
Okay. So you mentioned Jermonte earlier. Tell us a little something about Jermonte. What weight class is he fighting at? I've looked at him on BoxRec, and I did see him on his ESPN. I think that was his television debut. But what should listeners know about Jermonte?
Jermonte Clark is probably the most humble man I know. Like, I have never met anybody who is so talented and who is just so laid back about it and just so humble about it. Like, most boxers are trying to get their name out there and they're calling people out, and I'm not going to say most, but some of them do that, and he's just not one of those fighters. He just let his skills and his talents speak for themselves. He's not going to talk stuff at the press conference. He's just going to let you know what it is in the ring. But also, like, he's shy, so you would never know that. You would never know, like, he's super goofy in the gym. He gets on my nerves sometimes. He's kind of like a little brother to me. But he's super goofy. He's super nice. He loves kids. And he's like the creme de la creme in his weight class right now. Who's next?
Is he a super welterweight? Is that what he's fighting at right now?
I think he was fighting at 147. I'm thinking he might move up to 152.
Okay. That's what they have him listed at on BoxRec is 154.
Okay, they do. Okay, yeah, he's been fighting at 147 the last couple of fights, but I think he's going to move up, actually.
Okay, were you
fight.
Okay, were you able to attend his last fight in Canada, or were you able to go to that?
I was not. You know, they told me the last minute they had, like, an extra ticket, and I could have went, but it was, like, the day before they left, and I'm a working girl, so I couldn't make that, but, I've actually only seen him fight, like, in person once, and that was in Cincinnati, Ohio. But all the other fights, I just see film of that, or watch it online. But luckily, I get to see him spar all the time. His TV debut on ESPN, I don't think he sparred for the last 2 months before that, just because he couldn't find any work. Like, he went in there with no sparring.
Wow.
Like, every time we would reach out to somebody, like, they would say they would come down, and they would never show up.
Now, that's interesting, because Cincinnati is packed full of boxers, so, I mean, it's kind of odd that he's struggling to find, you know, good sparring partners.
He's putting everybody to sleep. I'm not even lying. Like, he's putting everybody to sleep, and everybody's like, no.
That's kind of interesting, because the day that you were actually up here in Dayton, which we kind of figured out since, you know, just yesterday when you looked through some of my pictures, he was actually fighting a guy that was two or three weight classes above him. So I see what's going on with that. But let me ask you this. What did his appearance on ESPN, what did that do for the Real Deal Boxing Club and Coach Buck?
We were very excited. We watched it as a family, of course. I think Coach Buck was excited. I think I was excited for it. I know he was excited. As far as it doing anything, like, Jamonte is very humble. A lot of people, like, we actually go to the same church, and I don't think anybody in our church knows that he's a boxer besides me and his grandmother. And I'm just like, Do I need to get up in the pulpit and tell people that you're a boxer and that we need to pray for you before you go on this next fight? Like, why don't you tell people this? I just think it's so crazy that nobody knows that he's a boxer. Like, and we go to a really big church. Like, there are a ton of people in there that probably could, like, network or who knows, but.
Right.
It's just like he didn't really say much about it. I think I promoted it more on social media than he did.
What impact did it have on the other kids at the gym to see Jamonte on ESPN?
I think it makes it, like, real for them. Like, I know one of them, who he's really close with, AJ, he's 16, and I know he trains with Monte. Like, he sticks to Monte. He sticks by his side. And I know that it probably just excited him to watch, and I know it just kind of made it more real for him. Like, this is possible. Like, I can be on ESPN fighting one day. I can be on TV fighting.
Right. Is AJ is that the kid that was also from Cincinnati that sparred that day up in Dayton?
Yes, he did spar that day. He did.
Because I heard a lot of good. I heard a lot of good things about him, and that he was just somebody to be watching for.
Absolutely, AJ is actually an 11-time national champion, and he reminds me of Jermonte so much, and I love that he's like, you know, there's a ton of people he could put out here, but he looks up to Jermonte. He's shy as well, and he's just a goofy kid, a nice kid. He won't call you out. He's very polite. But he's a hell of a fighter. Like, a hell of a fighter.
That's what I've heard. So, I want to know something about some other kids that are in Real Deal. But what's next for Jermonte? I mean, is he, that might get into my next question, but where can we see Jermonte in action next?
I'm hearing sometimes in October. That's what the streets are saying. The boxing streets.
Sometime in October, you said?
That's what I hear. In the city, in Cincinnati.
Okay. So I only got about two more questions. Who are some of the other kids? And this might bleed into my final question, which was about the event September 24th in Cincinnati. But who are some of the other kids for us to look out for, or some other fighters to look out for coming out of Real Deal Boxing Club?
We have Tyreek Gordon, who is I'm probably the closest to him. He's like my little brother. I have him with me all the time. I think he's currently ranked number 3 in the nation right now. And he really doesn't have the style that most amateurs have. He has a more professional style, and he's a fighter. Like, he will just sit there and fight with you. Unlike AJ will move around. Like, I think he is probably one of the greatest defensive fighters I've ever seen at 16. Because I've seen him hang with Rasheed Warren. But we have Tyreek Gordon. We have a new kid. This kid probably started, maybe 6 months ago. His name is Jamarion. He is 12. We took him to the ringside tournament. He had never had a fight before. He won the entire tournament. Like, his first fight was at the tournament. And then maybe 2 weeks ago, we had a show here. He fought the number one kid in the country in his weight class. This kid only had 3 fights. The 3 fights he had at the ringside tournament, and he beat this kid who had over 60 fights. And he beat him good. Like, it was a clean win, like, all 3 rounds. And I'm really excited. They say he's the next AJ. But he just gets so excited watching him. Like, I'm like, you should calm down, sir. But everybody just gets so excited watching him because he's a natural boxer. Like, he just has that natural talent. We have a ton of kids, though. Like, our team is just getting bigger and bigger. We originally started with, like, I want to say 3 kids. Now we have maybe a team of probably, like, 13 or 14.
Okay.
I think we have another kid, Markel Meek Hardy. He's number 1 in the country right now, and he has just been tearing up all the shows in Cincinnati. He's so funny, and he's so entertaining to watch, too.
Now, when you mention these rankings, where are they ranked, or what organization is this?
Most of them are ranked out of the Silver Gloves. AJ and Tyreek are too old to fight in the Silver Gloves. AJ is 16, Tyreek is 17. They were ranked out at the Youth World, I think it's called, tournament.
Okay. So for AJ, you just mentioned he's 16. The Olympics just passed. It'll be another 4 years before we see them again. Is his direction to go to the Olympics, or is he somebody that's going to be looking at trying to turn pro at some point?
We actually had recently, he said he would like to go to the Olympics, but he doesn't want to wait that long, so he thinks he'd probably just go pro. Probably before the Olympics come.
Okay.
Again.
Okay. Well, look, I just want. Right. I got 2 more questions.
Okay.
What is this September 24th event? Tell us a little something about it. you know, how can we get tickets? Where is it being held? And just what's its purpose?
September 24th, we are having the state. It's called the Enemy of the State Boxing Show. The Battle for Ohio. We'll have gyms from St. Louis come in. We'll have gyms from Cleveland, Columbus, Toledo, and basically, we're having our kids fight all of these kids from around Ohio and basically the Midwest to prove that we're the best in Ohio. We run Ohio. And we're actually working with a promoter, Wyatt Promotions, and he's actually taking care of everything, all the financial stuff. And basically, he is just for him. We don't have to go out here, or the parents don't have to go out here and try to find the money so our kids can go to these tournaments, because these tournaments are, like, very expensive. They're, like, week-long. Like, I think it's outrageous that they're, like, a whole 7 days, and the kids are, like, it's cool, but that's another thing. But it's going to be a great show. I don't think anybody has thrown a show this big before, an amateur show. Somebody called Floyd.
Now, just to make sure, all of these fights will be amateur fights?
All the fights are amateur, yes. And actually, AJ is going to be the main event.
Okay, how many fights could fight fans expect to see at this event?
We'll have 15 bouts. We'll actually have a performance from a local artist who the kids just happen to love. I think his name is Mondo, and they just had to have him perform at this show. So I said, okay, whatever you guys want, just win. The last four fights will be for belts, and yeah, it's gonna be a crazy show.
What's the start time, and what's the location? What's the venue?
It'll be at the Avenue Event Center, which is actually right next door to the gym. The doors open at 2:00. Show starts at 3:00. The first 100 people in the door get a free T-shirt from Wyatt Promotion. Tickets go on sale actually today. You can get them at Real Deal Boxing Club, or you can go on 513seats.com and purchase tickets online if you like. Also, I'll make sure my parents have tickets. So if you know any of the parents at the gym, you can reach out to them. And then if you need tickets, you can also just hit up the Facebook page, Real Deal Boxing Club, and I will probably be able to link up with you.
Okay, that's awesome. I do think you guys need to get on Twitter, though, but, you know, that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion.
I'm so much to run. I'm the only one doing it. Nobody else is on social media but me.
I could imagine. I've talked to some of these guys. You know, like, I've been trying to offer my services as far as covering some of these events and trying to, you know, put some articles out there to raise the attention or the awareness of what's going on. And, you know, guys don't email me back or don't contact me. So I can totally understand. But like I said, it's so helpful. It's so helpful that when people want to, you know, when we see something on Facebook or see an advertisement or a flyer or a picture or whatnot, it's just so helpful to hit Google and try to find everybody to know what's going on. And so
these days I just click hashtags. That's how I found you. I clicked the hashtag.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm doing something right. Look, before I let you get out of here, you did mention that you stay in tune with a lot of boxing that's going on in the state of Ohio. Later on tonight, we actually have an Ohioan out of Toledo, Ohio, Mr. Robert Easter Jr.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Is going for the a world title, an IBF, I believe it's a lightweight title, against Richard Comey. What's your thoughts on that?
I'm so excited. I'm just so proud of him. I'm so happy for him. I think I went to his camp twice.
I lost you.
Hello?
I hear you.
Okay. I actually got to witness him for a couple of days because me and Buck dropped Jamonte and AJ off up there for work, and I was just in awe of watching him work, and I'm sure everybody else was too. But it was just so exciting to see somebody train for a belt, like a world title. Like, that's exciting. So I'm so proud of him, and I'm so happy for him. And I think he got it. I hope he got it, but I think he got it. I feel good about it.
Yeah, I hate to discount this other fighter, Richard Comey. I have not seen much of him. Mm-hmm. But it looks like he's fought a lot in Africa and once or twice in America. He does have a lot of knockouts. I give him that. But I think he might be outclassed by E-Bunny.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of his knockouts, I don't know much about him, but like you said, he had a lot of fights in Africa, and it was like, who is he fighting?
Exactly. I mean, I think Easter's last victory on his debut on the PBC, Argenis Mendez, I think that was very impressive, and I just can't see this Commie guy really being more of an obstacle than what that guy was.
Right, I agree.
So, I'm so thankful for your time tonight. I do hope we speak in the future. I do hope we meet in the future. And, I'm looking forward to making my way back down to Cincinnati.
Absolutely.
To check out.
Absolutely, September 24th.
Right. I'll be in the house for that.
Woohoo!
I saw there was a fight coming up maybe second week in October it was another group that's promoting that. Will you be in the house for that? I think it's at that Radisson down there.
Yeah, I'm always at those fights, actually. I'm always there, so yeah, I'll be there.
Okay, well then we'll have to get in touch and, at least introduce ourselves face-to-face.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to say about Real Deal Boxing before you get out of here?
Let me talk my shit. Real Deal Boxing Club, the best boxing club in the world. Anybody can get it. 96 London Hamilton Avenue. Y'all can come get this work if you want it. We got somebody for everybody. Somebody tell Jeff Camp. I got my little brother for him. AJ will give him that work. And that's about it.
Okay, hold up. You said Jeff Camp?
Sure did.
Oh, now hold on. Now we got to go another couple minutes. Hold on. Who are you suggesting fight Jeff?
I said my little AJ. He can come. He ain't pro yet, but he can come down a real deal and get some work.
All right. I actually have an interview with Jeff that I did in his last fight 2 weeks ago in Indianapolis. I'm gonna edit that into this episode. So
right.
we'll get a little something started.
Alrighty.
All right, thanks for your time tonight, Lorraine.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Uh-huh. Have a good night.
Okay. You too.
Bye.
You are listening to
Hey, Me, No Mind
with show host Wood.
Hey, what's up? Against my better judgment, I'm going to go ahead and add on this Latoris Harrison interview. It is going to make the podcast run a little long, but hey, these are portable. You can download them. You can fast forward. You can rewind whatever you want. It's really suited to however you want to take it in. So I was going to do a part two, but like I said, Triple G, the fight is coming up later on tonight. Me and Latoris dig into that. We break down some power talk. Like I said, Pay Me No Mind is really more, I like to lean it more towards entertainment than just sports alone, similar to ESPN and what it tries to do. Not like I'm biting off of their format, but we talked through some serious things. I've been waiting for somebody to really break down some of the effery. No curse words on here, although Lorraine dropped in a few. But I've been waiting for somebody to spar with on some of these TV shows. I've done that in the past with Ray Donovan, Power. I used to do some Empire looks. So that's part of what I do. So like I said, again, feel free to grab the cursor or whatever that status bar is, fast forward some stuff, or you know, don't even listen. But I do appreciate, like my man said, B Meeks used to say, 3,000%. I appreciate anybody that clicked on it, press play. But like I said, I don't want to do a second episode or a part two just for the sake of time. So we'll work to keep it to an hour in the future. But like I said, again, check out my man.
All right, you're listening to the Pay Me No Mind show. This is your host, Wood. Right now, I want to introduce a very special guest, my man Latorius Harrison out of Indianapolis, Indiana. What's going on, boss?
What's happening with you, man? The show?
Not much, man. I know we were supposed to get together a few weeks ago. You know, things happened and we haven't talked since, but we did meet 2 weeks ago at the CVA promotions event. Well, there was a lot of fights on that card, but that was for Curtis Hill Jr. But what's going on with you, man? You doing any work this weekend, covering anything locally, anything?
Oh, man, I ain't doing much. I'm waiting for the car, 410 car to come up later this month. Check that out. But this weekend, I'll just be sitting back watching the Brooklyn Golovkin fight. That's all I'll be doing this weekend.
All right. Let the folks know, man, I know you got a podcast. I know you got a boxing podcast. It's a couple episodes deep. Where can folks find you online, man?
Online, you can find me, Latorius Harrison. I'm going to spell it out. It's Latorius Harrison. But my podcast, we have a boxing podcast called Standing Eight Live. You can find that fan page on Facebook, and my other podcast is The Show 317. And those are basically where I hang out at, those places right there.
What's The Show 317 about? I know that's two guys, two girls. What's that about, man? What is that about?
The Show 317, that's like my baby as far as anything I'm doing right now. It's just a podcast where we talk about current events, and then it's like a battle of a sections type ordeal. Like, we actually down to one woman. We had one quit on us. She couldn't take the heat of the misogynist behavior, I guess some would say. But we are actually auditioning, trying to find another woman to fill that void. But it's fun. It's comedy based. It's humor based. But sometimes we get into deep social issues. So it's a we touch on everything, and the whole goal is to basically entertain and give information and provoke thought.
All right, I'm looking for my invite to something, boxing or the 317 something.
What was that you said, man?
I said I'm looking for my invite to be a guest on something.
Oh, you know what? That's coming too, man. Especially if you ever in town again, I want to get you on. Because more than likely, it'll be on a weekend, so you get on the show 317. But we'll get you on either one. You a big boxer fan, big. You make your moves. I see you. I'll be checking you out. So it'll be good to link up with you with my Standard A Live family. Shout out to Phil and Jason Ford.
Let me ask you a question, Latorius, man. What's going on? What are you watching right now on TV as far as your series that you're following? Even if it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime, what TV series are you watching closely?
Oh, man, right now I'm on two shows. That's Power and Ballers. Those are the shows that fill up my weekends right now.
Boom. See how I set you up?
I see.
Let's dig in. Before we get into this boxing talk, for anybody that's tuning in and press play on that, we're getting ready to talk to Daniel Jacobs and Sergio Moore comes on tonight, actually, in about an hour. And then also tomorrow's the big time fight. I hate that I don't know off the top of my head whether or not it's pay-per-view. I don't think it is, but Triple G and Kell Brook out of London, Great Britain, tomorrow. But like I said, I do sports and entertainment on the Pay Me No Mind show, so we're going to talk real quick through Power, and then we're going to jump into the boxing stuff to close it out. Where are you with Power right now as a fan, man?
As a fan, I'm dedicated. I look forward to each episode. I'm kind of analytical because I do a little bit of writing, so I watch it from a fan perspective and also as a critic perspective. So I like it a lot, though.
It's not getting too messy for you, man.
It's one of the episode where Tommy killed his girl. That was my favorite episode. But a lot of it seemed misplaced, and it is getting messy. It's like it's my whole complaint about Power in the first season was the writing. It's like they have unbelievable storylines and unneeded storylines, like when 50 Cent character Kanan went down south, and I didn't understand his whole ordeal with his cousin and the emphasis on her being this hardcore lesbian. Like, it reminded me of, like, if you ever watched The Wire, it's like they took Kima's character and made her, like, 100 times crazier. And I didn't understand. Because they took 50 Cent down south, and it's like, you have a grown man close to 40 years old, and you wait that long to become addicted to some lean. It's like they're going into too many things, and to make the storyline, it don't make sense. Like, some
Thank
of the
you.
Moves they're making.
Thank you. And that's why I'm trying to be a fan. I love the show. I'm a big fan of anything that goes on in New York City. But it's just like, all they keep introducing is a new tentacle. Every week I feel like we get on another arc, and we really don't, like, to me, the big conflict is how do you choose, and I think you said my girl looked like she's 62 years old.
Yeah, Angela.
She does nothing for me, but I understand, you know, it's the show. She's, you know, that's who they've cast. But I'm just like, bruh. And I would have to imagine that a lot of black females are sitting here like, you left Tasha and went to her? Go ahead.
I can understand, like, that sentiment. And I kind of feel like it the same way. And I thought about Tasha was trying to give Sean some ass. So then I'm like, go ahead, Ghost, leave. She was trying to get with the chauffeur and leave with the whole family. So you know what I'm saying? So Tasha, she's a dirtbag too.
But she was pushed there because of the absence of Ghost.
See, that's when she got to be her strongest. That's when she buckled down to be strong. She don't need to be worried about what Ghost doing as long as he... If Ghost would have made it official, and plus, like I'm saying, she did it like right near, like right there with somebody who Ghost basically raised. And Sean, he was vulnerable, you know what I'm saying? He is square, and Tasha, she back in the limo playing with herself. Sean
right,
had
right.
been shielded over this silly shit, you know what I'm saying? he died for Tasha.
He was just a pawn.
Yeah, but Tasha, in her defense, she is a rider, man. She do some things that, under the circumstances, most women wouldn't do, like being Ghost's alibi where clearly he's done with her. And it's not too many women who would do that. So when you say that Tasha was forced to that, I can agree with that to a point and concede to that fact, because when it comes down to it, Angela, she's going to flip on Ghost. If it comes between her career and Ghost,
Go. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So let's close it up real quick so we can get to this boxing.
Okay.
Where do you stand right now? I'm a little disappointed that we just had a reunion between Tommy and Ghost, and now Milan has already flipped Tommy against Ghost again. So where are you with that? And then secondly, where are you with Milan ordering for Lakeisha to beat Lala to be taken out?
Tommy, man, it is like he that's a real character where somebody their ego is so messed up to where they don't see the bigger picture. It's like his immaturity is easy for them to prey on. His immaturity and his recklessness and his lack of fear, which is based on ignorance, it's easy for somebody to manipulate. Where Ghost, or even though they're friends, you can tell that they had a history of him manipulating that friendship to have Tommy follow him and do what he wanted to do. So once somebody catches Tommy and being as vulnerable he is emotionally, it's easy to, like, whoever say the right things to him can control him. And with Milan playing him to the fact, like, you don't got to be Ghost Klon, and that's how everybody from his girl was saying to everybody, calling him that, which he never wanted to be. And him not just respecting the fact that everybody's not a leader, but he want to be that leader. And it's crazy, though, because their relationship, it just don't seem like a relationship that can be repaired. And again, it reminds me of The Wire with Stringer Bell and Avon. You know what I'm saying? How Stringer Bell wanted to go legit, but Avon wanted to stay in the streets. And when you have that kind of dynamic in a friendship or any relationship, it always causes it to just fall apart. And I think the killing of Todd, what's her name? Lala character. Keisha.
Lakeisha. Keisha.
I think that's a test of his loyalty. But even, like, I don't understand how they turned Tommy into this person, because Tommy has never been the cold-blooded killer. He's always had a reason to kill somebody instead of being just the guy you put a battery in his back, telling him to do it, he get it done, killing an innocent woman. So it's just him being manipulated by somebody else, but he don't see it that way. And we see that all the time in real life, and not just in the drug game, but just life in general.
Yeah, I just don't see what you gain by taking out Keisha. Like you said, that is something to test Tommy's loyalty. I just think it's foolish by the writing team.
I do too.
I mean, I'm glad that they kind of wrapped up Holly's storyline, because she didn't fit in. She was the square peg in the round hole in the whole show. So I kind of was glad that they moved on with that. But then it was the fact they did that kind of reckless, like Tommy couldn't control himself.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm just kind of losing it. Week by week, I'm just kind of losing interest in the show. And I think it's because they really have never focused on the organization the way that they did in The Wire. We knew the organization.
And that's what I tell people all the time, too. It's like The Wire was able to go on for multiple seasons, because even though you had the main characters, you had smaller characters and smaller roles that ascended to become bigger characters. Like Bodie, he got bigger. You create, like, outside of Tommy, Ghost, and a little bit of Kanan, there's no one else. So you could, on The Wire, on any great TV show, especially on cable like Oz or Soprano, you could kill major characters and still keep the show going and interesting with great writing. And Power just haven't shown that ability. They haven't developed the characters. The storylines are everywhere. Like, even when Kanan was about to shoot Ghost's son, that was senseless, and it didn't make any sense at all, outside of the fact of showing that Kanan's crazy and cold-hearted, to where Kanan sat in prison for all that time and was real calculated and played every move close to his chest. But now he's reckless, out here robbing jewelry stores, sipping lean. And this is supposed to be a gangster who's seasoned. And it's like they just let that character go to waste.
And do we really think that Kanan would believe in a son who just rebelled against his father because he uprooted the whole family? I mean, that right there, like you said, just, it's a lot of loose ends and just getting a little messy. And I really appreciated the show, because I'm not a big fan of Empire and how it's kind of went the way of, like, shock value stuff.
Yeah,
and
I was
hopeful that Power offers something different, and it just seems like it's kind of lost its way a little bit. Last question before we get on to this boxing. Ballers, how's the season going for you? I had to tune out about two episodes ago. I had a little hookup on the way I was watching it, and something blew up in my face, so I kind of got rid of an app that I was using to watch it, and now I haven't been up to speed on it these last two or three weeks. What's going on with Spencer Strathmore?
I didn't get to see the last episode, but I'm current outside of that. Ballers is just like an HBO tradition. It's well written. It's incredible how they develop the characters and the personalities, and, like, everything just seems real. Like, I'm a fan of The Rock and his acting anyway, but like I noticed like small things, and it's gonna be weird. But when he was getting his pain medicine, he like eating the medicine out the bottle. And then and I'm like, man, I can't take nothing without water. And he's chewing. I know he's not chewing nothing in real life, but it looked real. You know what I'm saying? It's
right,
just
right.
It's like the subtle things that bring that show out. The characters with Denzel, son, I can't think of his character name on there. You know what I'm talking about? The receiver.
Ricky.
Yeah, Ricky. What's his name? Ricky Jared. I mean, his over-the-top personality is believable. Like, even things that seem over-the-top is believable. And it shows you the intricacies behind the scenes of the NFL, the relationships, like how when people get cut, how they have to be told the callousness of the front office execs and stuff. And it just tells a good story, man, and it's real enjoyable. I like that show a lot.
Yeah, I like how the pace that Ballers moves at. It doesn't try to be too serious.
Yeah.
It doesn't try to be too hip. Good show. Look,
yeah.
I know I probably lost some people. Once again, it's the Pay Me No Mind show. I'm glad to be back. I've been off for about 3 weeks. Right now I got Latouris Harrison of the show 317 and the Standing 8 Live podcast. We're getting ready to get into some quick boxing. Actually, we're about under an hour away from getting into the PB show that's coming on tonight. So I appreciate you taking this on the drop of a dime. I didn't want you to think, I was BSing with you and wasting your time. So tonight, the headline fight is actually Daniel Jacobs against Sergio Moura of the Contender fame. As you know, Jacobs knocked out Moura a year or so ago at 160. How you see this one playing out, man?
Jacobs should beat him legitimately this time. The last fight, it was fast-paced and it had a couple knockdowns. I was more disappointed in Jacobs getting caught and dropped by Moura than I was him dropping Moura. Moura has 4 knockouts. He's never been known as a heavy puncher. He's really a 154 fighter his whole career. And here's
right.
Jacobs, who's supposed to be like, I mean, it's sad to say, but the great black hole of the middleweight division. Like, you hoping he can go out there and beat up the European fighters, and he's struggling with Sergio Moura. No disrespect to Sergio Moura, but when we talk about class, Sergio Moura is not the person who should be putting you on your ass. I wasn't impressed at all about anything in that fight, especially that it ended on a technical knockout due to an injury to Sergio Moura. So I wasn't impressed at all at that.
Exactly. Now, I mean, did he redeem himself somewhat by how he disposed of Peter Quillen?
But that was before the Moura fight, wasn't it?
You may be right. Like,
yeah.
I said, we did this last minute.
Yeah.
But he hasn't capitalized on what he did, from the impact of that victory is what I was basically getting at.
Yeah, and like when you hype that fight up as the fight for New York, and it was a good event and it was a great victory. He put his stamp on it, and where you don't go from a fight like that to getting dropped by Sergio Moura, it's not good for his marketing value, and I'm sure it's not good for his confidence. Even though he won that fight, you got put down by a fighter who's not known as a puncher. You didn't really get touched much by Quillen, who's somewhat known as a puncher, and you have to wonder where exactly his confidence is, since he was stopped a few years ago by the only puncher that he's really been touched by, I can't think of how to pronounce his name. So I wonder if that deters him from even getting in the ring with a Triple G. Like, I wonder where his confidence level is.
Right. Actually, you broke the first rule of podcasting, man. You asked me a question I didn't know about. We're just having fun here.
Yeah.
Actually, Jacobs called out Quillen in the ring after beating Sergio. That's how that whole fight got set up.
Okay. Yeah.
But and then Peter Quillen and him met last. I got something in the middle of my computer right now. They actually fought in May of 2015. No, December. I'm sorry, December. 2015. He fought Sergio in August. I was just disappointed, man, because after he knocked out Peter Quinlan, who I thought was going to win that fight, who I picked to win that fight, he came back months later. He never really called out Triple G. And then when he did start talking about Triple G, he said he needed about a year and a half to get ready, 18 months. And I just felt like between Quinlan and Jacobs, why is nobody stepping to Triple G that has a known name?
I really don't know. I mean, because outside of the, you think him being a middleweight champion, Al Haymon fighter, that he has a little bit of money. So I'm thinking that if he can keep fighting his little stablemates and still make decent money, that he'll wait on opportunity to cash out against Triple G, or I hate to say it, hope that somebody else beat Triple G so he don't have to fight him. And this is what I don't like about today's boxing, because it's like these fighters don't seem like they're as anxious to prove that they're great as they are to winning titles. Like, you can win these little titles, but it just don't define you. I mean, in my eyes, this is just my perspective, because I don't really know the ins and outs, but it just don't seem like he wants that challenge. I mean, you're both middleweight champions. He's clearly the number one middleweight in the world. And if you want to be the legit number one fighter, I think that that's a fight that you should ask for if you're a warrior. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And that's what Jacobs had presented himself as, was a warrior. So like I said, with him, Quinlan, and Quinlan is a guy that's talking about possibly moving up to super middleweight. I just don't understand. I was disgusted by the Darrell brothers, maybe even somebody at 154 like Demetrius Andre. None of these guys are stepping to the plate to fight Triple G. I mean, we had Curtis Stevens jump in there, David Lemieux, but it's just like, and then, you know, obviously Canelo, that didn't go down, but I'm just highly disappointed at everybody from 154 to middleweight. And then, of course, at the top side, Andre Ward kicked around making the fight, but then we have to read a million different websites to figure out, you know, who was the culprit and that fight not actually occurring. So, real quick before we move on to the last question, actually, I got two more. How do you see the night playing out with Jacobs Moore, the rematch? You think that goes a couple of rounds, or all, you know, the entire fight, or what?
I think that it's hard to tell. Like, if Moore, usually he's a person who just make a fight boring and ugly and just hope to win by a decision, being a little sneaky, throw a few punches here and there, and then just try to stop what his opponent's doing rather than focus on fighting this fight. So if he has the confidence that he can hurt Jacob, he might come in and engage more, which will get him knocked out. But I see it going to all 12 in a pretty boring fight.
Damn. I hope not. Also on this fight, out of Toledo, Ohio, we're here, me and you both cover Midwest boxing, and Robert Isha Jr. will be fighting Richard Commey for an IBF title at lightweight. Any thoughts on that one?
So you got me with the Broke the Rule podcast, and you asked me a question that I don't have an answer to.
I didn't text you about that. I was just trying to work in a little bit of love for Ohio. I think for anybody that press play tonight, Robert Easter, I do believe, had one of the more impressive debuts on the PBC. He is going up against an African fighter out of Ghana tonight, actually in about 50 minutes. We don't have to spend a lot of time there. I think Robert Easter is going to get that one. What I really wanted to ask you before we finish up with Triple G and Brooks is a catchweight question. As far as looking at Brooks, Kell Brook, go up to middleweight from welterweight, and this maybe ties into the argument of the MMA fighters against, or the success of MMA versus boxing, and the perception that there's a growing audience for MMA and a shrinking audience for boxing. Do you think a rule needs to be instituted in boxing where you can't go up a weight class without facing a top 10 fighter in that weight class before you fight for a belt? Do you think that's something that would kind of legitimize some of these moves that we're seeing in boxing right now?
No, I don't. Because, like, this isn't anything new. Like, this has been happening to where if you have a name that can generate buzz or money, that, as sad as it is, you just leapfrog the top 10. And that's not just boxing. That's MMA, too, where if you have a fighter who's like Conor McGregor, he jumped up to face Diaz, and he leapfrogged all the people in the division who had fought to get those rankings. So I really don't. Like, ideally, it might seem like it'll make a difference, but at the end of the day, it's a business, and as much as we hate it, business moves are often made.
That was a great counter right there with the whole McGregor point, because they did slip that one in where he went up two divisions. But do you think with the power for Dana White to order a rematch as soon as he would like to see it, or as soon as he thinks the public would like to see it, we don't have that same power on the boxing side. So do you think some of these catchweight fights, like if Brooke goes out here and gets destroyed tomorrow, the way that I see it happening, do you think it impacts boxing more so than what we see going on the MMA side? Because there is nobody who can demand some type of corrective action when something bad does happen from these big jumps.
I mean, like, we just seen the same thing happen to Khan. You know what I'm saying? We just went and got almost killed by Canelo. It's been, like, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I know it's been other instances throughout boxing to where fighters come up and wait. And you can even go with and say, like, the Billy Khan and Joe Lewis fight where he came up and wait and competed to the late rounds just like Khan did against Canelo before he just got knocked out. So it's like, it's not a new avenue in boxing. It's something where people jump weight and get knocked out, or sometimes even get a surprise victory. And I think that's like, it's like anything can happen in the ring. Like, we don't know, and that's the thing about Brooke going up and accepting that challenge. He feels that he can win. And not to tiptoe too much into that conversation, but it's not a fight that Brooke has to take for money. So, I mean, it's just like when a fighter, and we were just talking about the Danny Jacobs not having the guts to get in there with a Triple G. So when you have a fighter, even though he's smaller, who does show that moxie to go up against a fighter who HBO is selling to us as this indestructible beast, like, when do we say good for him or bad for him? Like, it's hard to decide.
Great point. So let's close it out, man. Once again, this is the Pay Me No Mind show. This is your host, Wood. Right now, I'm over with Latoris Harrison of the show, 317 and Standing Aid Live. How do you break down this Triple G Kell Brook fight that's going on tomorrow night?
I looked at the size difference, the height in particular, which isn't much of a difference. Looks like Triple G probably has an inch and a half on him.
Right.
Physically, they look about the same right now at the weigh-in, but I expect Triple G to come in much bigger, stronger fighter. People keep saying that Brooke has that he's a great boxer, and which he is, but they take away from the fact that Triple G is too. We haven't seen Triple G against top competition, and when you mentioned about the fighters who haven't called him out, we do remember that Lara called him out a bunch of times. So it is people around there who want to fight him who they haven't taken a fight. And I don't think Abel Sanchez wants that war fight either. But you can't take away the fact that Triple G is a decorated amateur who did beat great fighters in the Olympics, namely Andre Durrell. So he's seen speed and boxing at different levels. Granted that overhyped him and Curtis Stevens, his best competition, I just don't see any way that Kell Brook can beat him. He could try to box him, but I don't think that's the answer. Kell Brook is just not the answer to beating Triple G. And that's just my prediction. I don't think that he thinks that. I think he actually thinks he has a chance. And when you have confidence in yourself, that trumps anything that I could ever say. But I think that the facts are the facts. Triple G, he's bigger, stronger fighter. He has a good ring IQ. he's been hit by decent-sized middleweights, and I just don't see any way that Kell Brook can get out of here off of life support.
I struggled with it. You know, I was trying to put more content up, boxing content, and I was looking at doing a prediction article for this fight, and I just didn't want to make a fool out of myself trying to make something out of this fight, man.
Yeah.
I think one of the telling things for me is that Kell Brook went 12 rounds with, and it was a great 12 rounds. Carson Jones, but he went 12 rounds. He went 12 rounds with Sean Porter.
Yeah.
And it was a convincing win. He controlled the fight, but he didn't go for the knockout.
Yeah.
And I never really saw him stagger Porter the way that Thurman did. I know Thurman staggered Porter at least two good times. And Porter's somebody that's never been put away. But I'm just saying, you don't put away a little man that you were convincingly and soundly beating, and now you're going to go in here against Triple G. Like you said, Triple G took shots from Lemieux, Murray, Monroe Jr., a little bit from Wade. The man's on, a streak of 23 KOs. I just feel like, if, like you said, if he dove in early, I feel like he gets burned. And if we're trying to expect him to do something late, we got a guy that's fighting at, you know, with 14, 16 extra pounds for the first time. You know, we get into the championship rounds. I just can't imagine that a guy's going to be feeling 100% comfortable, you know, with all that extra weight on.
And I think that's going to be the biggest hindrance. But I do also want to say, though, for Brook to win, like, I haven't seen Triple G's in fighting or his ability deal with any sort of roughhousing. Like, Kell Brook knew how to strategically hold Sean Porter, and that was one of the gripes that Kenny Porter had. Kell Brook's holding, and it's like, if he can tie up Triple G and then show that he's at least as physically strong or even maybe stronger, because we haven't seen Triple G really being muscle. We've seen people just try to box him from a distance. We've never seen anyone play bully against him. So if he has a chance, I think that's the only chance to win dirty.
I'm glad you mentioned that, and I was having a boxing conversation with myself yesterday, as I often do. Boxing just not that great in Dayton, Ohio. But I appreciate the holding and some of the clinching if you use it to disrupt the rhythm and the momentum of another fighter and to control the fight. I don't like it if you just straight out hold as somebody else is getting off and that's your main counter to what they're doing. But if you mix it in, like as you're suggesting, I think if I saw that from Brook in the first two or three rounds, that he could actually do that and control the pace of the fight by deploying, you know, clinching in strategic moments, then I'd have a little optimism that he can get through 12 rounds. But I think I see it ending probably by the fifth or sixth round. I just think without true one-punch knockout power, I feel like Triple G eventually mixes it up and lands something to hurt Brook.
I agree. I see it the exact same way. I think it probably gets about the eighth round.
But okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if it ends early, like second, third. I wouldn't be shocked at any point if Triple G ended the fight. It wouldn't shock me off. We've seen Triple G in fights early and like against people his size and a little bit bigger. So everything is on Kell Brook to win this fight. And it's crazy because it's a lose-lose for Triple G and a win-win for Kell Brook.
Because exactly.
If he loses, he can go back and get a con fight in the UK that'll generate more buzz than this and more money.
And that's what I'm really so pissed off about is that the Khan Brook fight made so much sense, and I'm actually becoming a big fan of Great Britain boxing and Great Britain's boxing fans, and I felt like Khan should have did whatever needed to be done to deliver that fight to the people of you know, Great Britain. And now, you know, Brooke jumps up after what's his name? Chris Eubanks. Him and his dad messed up the negotiations with, you know, the show, for the showdown with Brooke. I mean, with Triple G. So I'm just really just disappointed in how that whole thing unfolded.
Yeah, I am too. I really am.
Right. Hey, look, man, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I appreciate the, you know, the commentary on what's going on with Power. And, you know, I look forward to us rapping again, man. I appreciate you for, you know, coming on short notice. Are your shows live, or is it meant to be downloaded?
They're live, but you can also listen to them on demand, but we do them live. It's just pretty much like this, where we don't have a script. Well, my boxing show, we have like a layout, but the show 317, we just shoot from the hip, just like that. But everything's live.
Now, I'm saying, should they look for you on a certain night on 317? Is that a weekly on a certain night, or just check for you on Facebook?
The show 317, we air every Saturday, 3 to 6 in the afternoon. We don't miss days. Saturday Live, we go from 8 to 9 or sometimes 8 to 10 on Thursday nights.
Okay. We're going to get back together on this hip-hop debate with Andre 3000
is legit. The dopest lyricist, man. Hey, he just say the most incredible stuff. And I get what you're saying, man, being that he's never done a legit solo album. He's done what they did, Half and Half. But if you just take the body of work that he's like the rapper's favorite rapper. He's like the go-to man when you want to get killed in your own song.
I totally respect your opinion, man. I just was mixing up the con. I just was sparring with you, to be honest, man. Just sparring with you.
But I understand, though, like, if you say it's not because you don't have an album, because, I mean, like, you know, in the early 90s, where if somebody be like, Ice Cube, he a good rapper, but he ain't N.W.A., where he stepped outside the N.W.A. and gave, like, two classics, you know what I'm saying? So I understand that, or Scarface coming out of Ghetto Boys, things like that. Because, like, I could be wrong, because we see when Method Man steps outside of Wu-Tang that he was just Clark Kent still. You know what I'm saying? Well, yeah, I mean, it's an argument. It's a fair argument.
Right, right. We'll chop that up next time. Like I said, everybody that tuned in, that's pressing play on this, I'm getting ready to do my last little bit of stuff before I get ready to check out tonight's fight. I do want to shout out the Bunny team. Robert Easter Jr. going up for this IBF lightweight title against Richard Commey. I didn't mean to throw that one out there on you, bro. I know that's a little Ohio-centric. And sometimes
you did what you're supposed to do.
Sometimes we clash a little bit, being Hoosiers and Buckeyes, although I'm a Wolverines fan. But, hey, man, I look forward to rapping with you in the future, man.
All right, can I shout out a couple people?
Yeah, sure, do your thing.
All right, first, I want to shout you out for having me on. Shout out to my Saturday Live peeps, Phil and Jason. Shout out to Jay Kemp. Shout out to my main team here in Indy, man, Team Thomas, K1, K2. Gonna bounce back from what happened in Montfort, going still do it big, still the best fighter in the city. Shout out to my show 317. Shout out to Bo, Candy, XO. We miss you, but it's a good riddance. And last but not least, I want to shout out to my twin. What up, Suge? I love you, man. And like I said again, thank you for having me, man.
All right, man. We'll be in touch soon. Hey, hold on, before you go. The September 24 Champs show, what's that about? Let us know. I know Javar Jones is on there. Who else?
Shout out to Javar. He's actually my homeboy. We stay in that, but we from Anderson. Special shout out to him. Javar, he'll be fighting on it. Malcolm, KO, King Jones, he'll be fighting on it. It has Willie Jakes. They're the main three that they're showcasing. It should be a nice card. All those fighters. Well, Malcolm and Javar undefeated. Willie has one defeat, but all of them come to fight, man. They all have aspirations to do big things. So it should be a pretty good turnout, man.
Okay. I'm gonna get with you on that off air. I did put in a call to Four Chimps to see if I could get set up to come over and check it out. They haven't hollered back at me, so we'll see. Maybe I gotta try to slip in with you or something.
Yeah, they don't really fool with me like that. But if I stay in touch with me though, man, because I still should be able to get something, man, and I'll holler at you.
Okay, all right. Hey, thanks for showing up tonight, man, and I look forward to checking in on you on the 317. Y'all do get a lot of good guests, a real diverse mix of guests week to week, so I've been checking y'all out. And again, you know, everybody that pressed play on this, we appreciate it. Check out Standing 8 Live and the show 317. All right, Latouris.
All right, bud.
Peace.
You are listening to
with
show host Wood.
Hey, look, it's great to be back. Sorry for the long show, like I said, but again, this is, you know, these podcasts are customizable for everybody that downloads them, clicks play or whatever. You know, if you're in this space or a fan of you know, shows that are in this space, then you know how it works. You know, I just came back with a lot of content, so hopefully the Jeff Camp interview wasn't too noisy. Like I said, it was in the dressing room. I just thought it was kind of authentic, you know, to experience a fighter, you know, a couple of minutes after doing something very big in their career. And so I thought it was a good thing to share that with you, you know, for anybody that press play and, you know, wants to know what goes on with some of these fighters besides just seeing, you know, what you see them talking to Jim Gray in the ring or Max Kellerman or something. You know, like I said, somebody for like Jeff Camp, you know, when you get upside down in your record, you know, when you don't have that, oh, you're not 10-0, 12-0, 8-0, you know, it's kind of hard for you to get marketed right and to take a step forward. And like, and from what I'm seeing with going to some of these local shows in the region, in the Midwest, you know, fighters don't show up, different fighters don't show up, or you fight on the road in somebody else's organization or another promoter's event, and they have a fighter that's been on a lot of their shows. You know, it's kind of interesting to see when these fights do go to the cards, and see how some of these decisions get made. You know, some of the judges that I'm seeing, some of the refereeing, you know, the refereeing that I saw at the Seconds Out fights over in Milwaukee a few weeks ago for some Rock Nation sports fighters. You know, to see the way that these fights were refereed, and in my opinion, how poorly some different aspects of the fight were handled, that's detrimental to a fighter's future. And like I said, you know, with the respect and the coverage that's in, or the support that's in the city. That's the thing. For like Jeff Camp to be over in Indiana by himself, when I got there and talked to him before the fight, he was the only person from Ohio in that building, from Dayton, Ohio, in that building, him and his girlfriend. So, you know, this is 30 minutes before you got to go out here and do something that's very important to the future of what you're trying to do and the business that he's trying to build. And he's the only one there. So that's some of the stuff that I'm focusing on, because it's a lot of stuff that takes place before a fighter gets to, you know, the PBC and doing what Robert Easter Jr. had the opportunity to do last night, you know, by becoming a IBF champion, you know, lightweight world champion. It's a lot of pitfalls and obstacles and setbacks on the way to that, you know, to realizing a goal like that. So shout out to Jeff. Shout out to Lorraine from the Real Deal Boxing Club. I'll be talking with Jamonte and their coach probably in the future. Shout out to Latouris. Good sport of him to rock with me on the drop of a dime notice. We've been in touch for about a month. But look, I'm going to let you get out of here so you can enjoy your college football day. Go Blue. They have 21-0 right now against the Knights of Central Florida. Monday night, My Redskins get it cracking, but everybody's team gets it cracking, you know, tomorrow in on the NFL side. Daily Fantasy, people, feel free to check out the press coverage podcast by my man, Jeff Lambert. You know, it's a ton of Daily Fantasy sports advice on the website, goingfor2.com. Feel free to check me out on the boxing side and some of the entertainment stuff that I'm on there chatting about. Hey. Like I usually say, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. Peace, and I'm out. What Nas say, had to turn to illegal commerce to get his feet out of them Converse.